Hey everybody, and welcome to Foster Adopt Village Episode 2. It's very exciting to have this podcast up and going, and thank you to everybody who listened to Episode 1. We already have our first comment on Foster Adopt Village on the website. It is from my mother, but it's a comment nonetheless. So thanks, Mom, for the comment. Keep the comments coming. Others of you are also welcome to comment. And also check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/fosteradoptvillage. And that's where a lot of stuff will be going on that's happening on the podcast. Get some information there and hopefully also build up some community there and get some back and forth going among us who are in this foster and adopt community. So today we are recording episode 2, and it is my favorite guest ever. My favorite guest we will ever have on the show.
Aww.
I know.
Hello.
It's the lovely Christina Jones. I traveled all the way to the other side of the bedroom to interview her.
Wow.
I know. It sounds a little risque. We like to keep it on the edge here. Christina is an occupational therapist. Like I said in the first podcast, she's a pediatric occupational therapist. So that comes in handy not just with our own boys, but also just with foster and adoptive parents who have questions about their kids' developmental issues and things that are going on with them physically, neurologically, those sorts of things. And so maybe down the road there will be some time where we can maybe solicit some questions from people that Christina can answer regarding developmental issues.
For a small fee.
For a small fee. Small to large fee. Christina is also chairing the HOPE Conference next year here in Little Rock. That's the what's that called again?
Central Arkansas Orphan Coalition puts it on.
That's
and
right.
Yeah, a big weekend conference for foster and adopt families to come in, get your continuing ed hours, but also just network and meet other families. It's awesome. I think there was like 350 or something that came last year, and this will be the third year to do it. So, yeah, totally come.
Awesome. And when's that going to be?
March 4th and 5th of 2016.
All right. So, yeah, so be watching out for that, and I'm sure that we'll be promoting that even more on the show as it gets closer. Christina is also a blogger, and you can follow her at christina-jones.blogspot.com. She has a fantastic writing style because it's conversational and easy to read, but also very raw and honest. And I think that's what a lot of people are drawn to, is your honesty and the way that you just sort of gush about what's really on your mind and really on your heart. It can maybe be some things that people are nervous or afraid to talk about, and we're not sure if we're allowed to talk about those things. You just kind of go for it and just throw it out there.
Yeah, I think that's kind of my personality. Like, I just, if there's an elephant in the room, let's all just talk about the elephant that's there. And so I think my blog takes that on. Also, just because it's a huge processing spot for me. And so I'm processing hard things, so it comes out there on the blog. But yeah.
Yeah. And I've also heard many people say that once they start reading the blog, they just can't stop. They get sucked in and drawn into your world and into your mind, and you just have this good way of reaching people.
Because I use a lot of hyphens and run-on sentences.
You literally can't stop reading.
You literally can't stop the
sentence. If you want to know what happens. Good enough. All right. So let's get going here.
Okay.
On our blog. I mean, not our blog. On our podcast. Let's start by talking about who's in our village. This is Foster Adopt Village. And this is about the people who surround us and help us through this crazy life. So the Jones family, who's in our village?
We have survived because of our village. And, you know, we've done foster and adopt in Texas and then moved here to Arkansas. And so our village is really big. I think a huge part of the success for us is that we have families who are in it and who foster and adopt and who can get it and who can tell the hard stories to. But then we also have families who don't and aren't involved in any way and totally like prop us up and encourage us. And they're not so sapped dry like the other families who are doing it, mm-hmm. That they have the mental and physical and everything resources to bring us dinners. I mean, just the little stuff, all the hand-me-downs we get. I mean, mm-hmm. just even just the encouraging words every time I post a blog, just, people saying that they're interested in our story and that they love seeing it play out. It is, mm-hmm. it is very motivating in the hard days. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you have people always telling you, you know, you're doing a good thing.
Yeah.
It's nice.
And so it is helpful to have both of those things. It's helpful to have the people who are in it and who kind of understand, but then also the people who are not in it who can kind of from afar be cheerleaders.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, sure. Definitely. All right, so back to your blog. What I want to spend the bulk of our time talking about is your latest blog post called It's Because You're Adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a letter to our son, Judah.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us who Judah is.
Judah is our fourth son in the age-wise lineup, and he's the oldest of our boys who are adopted. So our oldest three are biological, and our youngest three are adopted. And he's the one who just remembers the most from his dual life. He came to us when he was three and lived with us for about a year, went back home to mom for about 6 weeks, and then came back for us to finalize the adoption.
Mm-hmm.
So he I would say kind of a true or foster kid compared to our younger two who never knew they were foster kids, didn't understand all that. We've had to teach them that they were adopted even.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And so your latest blog is a letter to him about the reality of being adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And that he internalizes a lot of things. And kind of our fear is that he immediately jumps to, well, it's because I'm adopted. That's why mommy and daddy are punishing me now, or that's why mm-hmm. this feels unfair, or that's why something bad is happening to me now. It's because I'm adopted,
mm-hmm.
and it's because I'm different than everybody else. And so your blog spoke to a lot of people. I mean, it's been read, I checked tonight, it's been read 774 times. It's shared a whole bunch of times by people. And it just seemed to really strike a nerve, especially it seems like with moms, with
yeah.
foster and adoptive moms, who see that in their own kids.
Mm-hmm.
So give us a little bit of understanding of like his identity, because you talk about that like he's the only Jones boy without an obvious identity. Like we have our oldest who's kind of the leader. We have Titus who's kind of the giver. We have Seth who's the smart one. We have Kanan who's a hugger. Kanan's a hugger, everybody.
It's a thing.
And he owns it and lives it daily. Silas is the youngest, and he's also many things. So Judah is the one who maybe feels like he doesn't have a place or doesn't have an identity. So
yeah,
talk a little about that.
I think, you know, a big part of that is that he does have two older sisters, but wasn't necessarily raised a lot with his older sister. So he was kind of the big brother to the younger siblings. And then I think that's been a part of it, is when you have the identity as the oldest and then you come and join a family where you're not the oldest anymore. Now you're suddenly a middle child.
Mm-hmm.
And our oldest child, Levi, is a strong personality. I think that was a struggle for Judah to be like, I don't know my place. I used to be this, you know, but there's not a spot for that here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he also struggles with his sisters, because he used to belong with them and doesn't. And so it's just been a hard transition. And I really think a lot of it was too that even though we had him, he's been in our family 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, for that first year when he was in foster care, he wasn't really ours. You know, the goal of foster care is to get them back with their birth parents. And so we loved him and loved the boys, but even in our eyes, he wasn't ours that first year. We were trying to get them back with Isabel, their birth mom, who we had a lot of respect for and were really cheering for. And so even when he would be sad after a visit or kind of, you know, just kind of, he loves his mom, of course, but just would kind of mess with him after a weekend visit. And we would always play the whole, you get to go back with mom and like be the cheerleader for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I think it was hard to like switch that over and be like, oh, wait, never mind. You're ours, mm-hmm. and you fit here now. And I think that was hard for him and also really hard for me to switch back to you're not hers anymore, you're mine. But then we have an open adoption, so you're kind of ours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And making that shift not only affected him, but I think it affected us and
yeah.
just the way that we parent. And I don't think that I expected that. I don't think I anticipated how much of a shift that was really going to be
mm-hmm.
in my approach to him and how he interacts with us.
I think too, it's a trust thing for him. There's a really significant story in his life that I don't think I've ever shared on the blog, but when we got them back forever, you and the older two were already living in Arkansas, and it was just me finishing up things in Houston. And, you know, it was like then, you know, we got him back, and we knew it was going to be forever. And I, you know, his mom, we call her mom. Mom had, I mean, this was happening. He was back in my care, and we were just, this is forever, and just really trying to give him that assurance. There's no back and forth. This mm-hmm. is it. We're your mom and daddy forever. And then there was a whole mess up with the system, and he had to go to another foster family. And I think we'd had him back like a week. Mm-hmm. And then because they were trying to work out stuff with our foster license, he had to go to another kind of like respite care situation. And I will never forget. I mean, after you've been promised for a week, this is it. We're your family, your mom and dad. And then we had to put him in a car. Mm-hmm. And I just remember that dead look in his eyes as we were trying to explain, you know, I mean, how do you explain to a 4-year-old that, yes, we promised you forever, but now you have to go live with this family for a week. And so I think that just kind of jacked with him. I mean, it's just that we talk about this haze he gets or this deer in the headlights look where he wouldn't even look at us when he was in that car. He wouldn't mm-hmm. turn. He wasn't crying. He was just stone faced.
Yeah.
And I think that those kind of stories become a part of him and a part of his personality and identity and temperament.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And so, when you were writing this letter to Judah, this idea that it's because he's adopted, like, where do you see that playing out in his day-to-day life? Like, where do you see a time where you're like, oh, he probably thinks I'm treating him this way now because he's adopted? Like, give us a time.
I think he's kind of a melancholy personality, and so just nothing to do with him being adopted or a foster guy. I think that's just kind of his temperament. And so when something happens that, I mean, even something small, like I say, like in the example I gave in the blog, I say no to cereal, or I say, you know, no, we can't take you to the store right now. You know, just some things you have to say no to because he's one of six. He just internalizes everything. And I feel like the easiest thing for him to internalize too is what's different about me. It's because I'm adopted. Mm-hmm. And so I think for a long time I wanted to stay away from that phrase because I wanted things to be the same. I wanted this smooth transition between our older boys and our younger boys, and I didn't want that it's because I'm adopted to be like a real thing. Mm-hmm. And kind of patted myself on the back because we had this open relationship with his birth mom and felt like that has been such a healing thing for him and mm-hmm. felt like, oh, we aren't going to have the issues, you know, that some kids do who are adopted because we're making this effort to mm-hmm. keep his story fluid between where he came from and where he is now and keeping them in our part of his life all growing up. Mm-hmm. And so it's like I didn't want to let that phrase be a real thing. And then as I was writing this blog, it just kind of came to me, it is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And you just have to own that and let it be because that is what happened. And there are just going to be some things that are different because he's adopted. And I didn't want to admit that, but it's true. But I think ultimately it's not all negative.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it all kind of came out was, you know, there are just some, like the example in the blog about when we went to go see his birth dad and we had this all planned and he was totally excited. And he doesn't know his birth dad. I mean, we could have pointed out any African-American man in Houston and been like, mm-hmm. that's your birth dad. And he wouldn't know any different.
Right.
I mean, it's not like he knows him, but then when it didn't work out and we weren't able to see him, I mean, just the grief that was mm-hmm. there and that is only because he's adopted. I mean, there's no other reason to grieve somebody like that. And so, but anyway, it's just ultimately just to own that, yes, this is just a part of his truth. There are things that are going to happen, feelings he's going to have because he's adopted, regardless that we're working hard to have an open adoption. But then that there are positives to that too, and things that have happened in our family and in my life and in my growth personally that have only happened because he's adopted.
Yeah.
And so that is not a negative phrase because you were adopted.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I remember that day, you know, sitting in this parking lot in Houston when we broke the news to him that we weren't going to be able to see his dad, and, you know, tears just started coming out, and he climbed up into the front seat with me and I held him and, you know, mm-hmm. kind of rocked him a little bit, said, "You have every right to be sad about this. This is a sad thing. We're sad with you." And I think sometimes it's hard for me to remember to give him permission to grieve the things that a foster or adopted kid needs to grieve.
Yeah.
Like, there's a part of me that I think because one of the benefits is that it's because he has been so acclimated to our family now and just feels like a natural part of our family, that sometimes you forget, no, there are still some things that he needs to grieve. And so I think part of our role as parents is we've got to be able to not only give him permission to grieve those things, but we often also have to give him the words to put with it. Because I think he feels an emotion and he feels this emptiness and this like, oh, this is wrong and this is bad and this hurts me, but I have no idea why and I have no idea how to express it other than to sit here and cry.
Yeah. Well, I think it's weird for us too because neither of us are adopted, so I can't even understand that. I don't understand grieving someone that you don't know.
Right. Right. But yeah, but for him, that was a very, very
He mourned
visceral
that.
Moment. Yeah, for sure. And it's exactly right. Like our biological boys will never get that. They'll never get the grief side of that. And neither do we for that matter. So that can be really hard. So you said that this kind of just came out of you, like this blog just started sort of pouring out of you. And then you also made a comment to me the other day that it kind of centered things for you also. Like this just brought a lot of stuff together, a lot of issues together, a lot of struggles together, and also a lot of highs together that we've experienced. So what do you mean by that? Like how did this kind of draw things together for you?
I think I just started remembering different stories and situations that have happened. Like all the, if you haven't read the blog, this isn't going to make a lot of sense, but just events that have happened and then just hadn't really processed them all, but then realized that that was the cord running through all of them. That these feelings are because he's adopted. And even the whole, the weird one about for years, we talk about when I went back to go get him and he was watching for me out the blinds and came out, "Mommy, I get to live with you forever." I mean, I remember that. And I've told him that, and he knows that. And that's part of his story. And, but now he's like denying it that no, he wasn't happy and tries to tell me what really happened. And so it's just been like, why are you doing that? You know, what is that all about? And so it was just all these stories kind of piecing them together and realizing, yeah, there's some big feelings going on here that it's never something that is going to be fixed. As he grows through every developmental phase, there are going to be things that come up, and not kind of your token things you prepare for, like, family tree day at school, like everybody's kind of ready for that. And those are kind of like the cliche things, I guess, that adoptive parents prepare for, but just the more emotional, internal struggle.
Yeah. We're often not ready for that meltdown that we're not really sure why there's a meltdown happening. Yeah, for sure. And this, like I said earlier, this particular blog post seemed to really resonate with a lot of people. It got shared a lot. It's been read a lot. There have been a lot of comments about it. One of the more common ones is that people are reading it with tears streaming down their face, like especially foster and adoptive moms. They're reading it and they're going, "Yes, this is how I feel." Why do you think that is?
I think it just gave moms permission to say it's going to be different. I think especially moms that have biological kids and kids who are adopted out of foster care. I think it's probably different for families who have adopted, maybe through private adoption or international adoption, where you're going in knowing you're adopting and you get matched and you know this child is yours. I know I've been thinking a lot about that. There's something about just knowing from that, the second you see the child, that this is mine, like when you have a baby and they hand them to you and this, it's mine. You just, like I was joking with some friends the other day, like if you were up at the hospital having your baby and they accidentally handed you the wrong baby, would you know it? And I don't think you would. Like, I think if I just delivered a baby and someone handed me one and said, "He's yours," I would fall in love with that baby because he was mine. And so I think it's harder when you adopt kids that you fostered because for so long they weren't yours.
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to see them as yours. And so you don't have that instant attachment of mine. And not even just mine, but him saying back to us, "You're mine."
Right.
It's not there.
Right.
And so I can't remember your original question, but I think that's it. Is for so long, a lot of the research is focused on, you know, the kids' attachment and the reactive attachment disorder is all this big thing, and not a lot of attention has been on the parents have to attach to that child too. Mm-hmm. And that's as big of a marker for the success of that relationship.
Yeah.
And so to just acknowledge that, yeah, this doesn't happen automatically all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the reality of it, like we get into foster care and adoption, I think because we have this big heart, and this is just generally speaking, I think most people get into it because they want to help kids. They love kids. They want to provide a safe, good home for kids. And you sort of go into it with this kind of romantic idea of getting these, like, sweet, innocent kids with puppy dog eyes that come in holding their blanket. They just want to be held and rocked and loved, and they're going to do everything you ask. And it takes about 10 seconds to realize that ain't the case. Mm-hmm. And you're getting kids that have been through a lot of trauma, and they are displaying the effects of that trauma every way that they can. Mm-hmm. And you're having to figure out how to deal with it. And it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's really, really hard. And so, you know, several of the comments regarding your blog kind of pertain to that yeah, this isn't about just loving on these sweet, innocent kids. Sometimes it's about acknowledging how really hard and challenging and difficult this world is. One friend of ours, Jennifer, she wrote a comment that said, these are not, and she's fostering some kids right now. She said, these are not perfect little people that are easy to love. You can never understand until you've lived it. But when you have a difficult child that you have no relationship with, it's just hard, hard, hard. No need to explain it. It's unexplainable. You have experienced it or you don't know.
And I love her honesty too. I mean, that's hard to say because like you were saying, this idea of kids who are in foster care, like there's this innocence there and so it's hard to say this kid is really hard because you can't say that about, it's like saying a puppy is ugly. You can't say that about a puppy, you know, this. Yeah. And so it's really hard to, even if it's not, they're not hard from the trauma. Some kids' personalities are just hard.
Yeah.
And when you don't have that instant attachment, you gotta work and fight for it. And I think too, when you get kiddos that are older, you know, it's a little bit easier to fall in love with a baby. And even our bio boys, you know, we had our youngest Silas of the sibling group came to us at 3 days old. And I mean, everybody loves him. And to be honest, he's one of our hardest kids right now. I mean, he's a handful and can be really mean and aggressive to the older brothers, but they love him and always have, because I think he came to us as a baby. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit harder, to fall in love with kids who have behavior issues and who are peeing and pooping their pants and who just make your life hard. It's harder to do that attachment.
Yeah. And I talk a lot about conditional versus unconditional love. And I think we've really seen that playing out in our family with our three oldest biological boys and three youngest adopted boys, that it's so different when there's conditional love from kids who have been forced into your home.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in foster care. Like, there's no reason for them to respect you. There's no reason for them to listen to you. You are not an authority in their life.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the same relationship with them that a biological parent does. And so it goes both ways. It's not just your love for them, but it's also their love for you is conditional, and you have to work at it.
Mm-hmm.
But especially when you're parenting side by side, when you've got bio kids and foster or adopted kids, and you're parenting them side by side, your internal dialogue or your expectations are that everybody's just going to fall in line and they're going to do it because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
And your bio kids are way more likely to, and obviously that's not always the case, but your bio kids are way more likely to do that than your foster or adopted kids because that relationship just isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And when that's not there, that is so hard.
And it's hard to realize it about yourself too, that you're like, I am a horrible person. I love this kid based on how hard or easy he makes my life. I mean, that's hard.
Yeah.
Like, that's a jerk of a person.
Yeah.
A jerk of a mother.
To say that about a kid that's coming from a really hard place that has maybe been abused, maybe been, you know, neglected.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, like I've also said before, if you tell me that,
okay, we'll
sorry, we have an interruption.
Go downstairs, we'll fix it.
with one of our children. You just heard some quality parenting. And there is something going off downstairs. I'm not really sure what
that is.
Fine. We'll get to it later. Also quality parenting. Anyway, like I was saying, what was I saying?
About conditional love.
Yeah. That's right. If you were to tell me that there's this kid that's come from this really hard place, that's been neglected, that's been abused, that just needs somebody to love on him, absolutely, bring him to my house. Mm-hmm. Let him live here. Let us take care of him. Let us love him. But then when you actually bring that kid here, you're like, oh my goodness, this kid is driving me crazy. And they do. They push every button that you have, and they draw out every insecurity that you have about yourself, because you have to stand on your own merit and not on the fact that you are their biological parent. Like, you have to earn it. And man, that can be so exhausting.
And attachment takes time. I mean, everybody knows that it takes time, but in the middle of that time, you still have to do your day-to-day functions, and you still have to go to school and, you know, just all those routines and stuff.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to deal with momentarily something that's going on downstairs. So Christina's going to go deal with that. So I'm going to talk for just a minute about, what do I want to talk about here? Well, I just wonder how much this affects you people who are listening to this. I'm curious to know how you have experienced the whole conditional versus unconditional love, how you've experienced that shock when you got into foster care or adoption because you wanted to help out these kids. And then once you got into it, you went, whoa, this is not what I thought it was going to be. Because man, that can be really earth shaking and really shattering for us. And it can really throw us off if we're not ready for it, and if it's not something that we're prepared for, because there's just such a reality to it. And when Christina comes back in, sorry, we probably should have just paused it, but whatever. When Christina comes back in, I do want her to share kind of how she wrapped up her blog, because it's really beautiful, and I encourage you to go read it anyway. But it basically gets back to the fact that the phrase "because you're adopted" becomes something really beautiful. And it becomes something really redemptive when you realize that it's part of a story that is shaping every person in your family, not just your adopted kids, not just your foster kids, not even just your bio kids, but it's shaping you as a parent and as a human being. And that's just a really beautiful thing. So here we go. Everything okay?
So professional. Yes, it's fine.
All right. So did you do quality connective parenting just now?
I tried my best. I gave them my iPhone and said, we'll be back in a minute.
I read that in a textbook once. I think that is what you're supposed to do. So I was just saying that it can be kind of earth-shattering and unnerving when you get into this to help kids, but then all of a sudden you realize, oh, wow, this is really hard, or I don't particularly like this kid. That can be unsettling in a lot of ways. But at the end of your blog, you talk about how "because you're adopted" actually becomes kind of a redemptive phrase, mm-hmm. because of the way that it shapes you and the way that it changes you and the way that it forces you to love because you love, not because he's yours, mm-hmm. not because he came from your body, but because he was placed in your home. And now you are forced with, I'm either going to decide to love this kid or I'm going to decide not to love this kid. Mm-hmm. So talk about that a little
bit.
And
I think decide to love when the feeling is not there and when you know they don't love you back. Like, mm-hmm. that's hard to keep pouring into someone when it's not a reciprocal relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is. I also think at the same time, just like when you work for something, it's worth more. Mm-hmm. I feel like it did totally grow me. And it has stretched me, and I have worked for this awesome relationship I feel like we have now. And so it's just, it's kind of like the story I was telling you, kind of like the story of the prodigal son, where it just means so much because of where it came from, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And like, even like, I'll tell you, you know, I picture you on your deathbed and however many years, and like all the boys coming in to talk to you and saying their final wishes. And like even just the image of Judah coming in and talking to you can just bring me to tears thinking about that. Because we worked so hard to get there. And it just didn't come automatic and easy.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's her bulldog.
I don't know if that's sorry. This is such a serious moment, and our dog's over here yakking something up in the corner. I don't know if that's getting picked up. We were so prepared for this podcast tonight, in case you can't tell. Okay, so along those lines, though.
Yes.
Taking it to a positive plane now. What have been some of your best moments, like some of your favorite moments that you'll look back and go, man, I'm so glad that we decided to foster and adopt, because if we hadn't, I wouldn't have experienced this.
I think when I just have those moments of joy with our boys who are adopted that you wouldn't have had because they wouldn't have been here. I mean, just, I don't, not all of my blogs are like this. I mean, there are just moments where it just fits, and like silly stuff. Like we were at the dinner table the other night and the boys are just cracking each other up, and Judah was doing this mommy, Charlie bit me kind of a thing. And we were just laughing, and it was just so much joy. That's huge. Mm-hmm. And then just when I do go back and read old blogs and think, man, I forgot that this used to be a struggle for him, or this mm-hmm. used to be a struggle for us. And you just see how that relationship has been redeemed, and just see him. I know another story. We were at our support group for foster parents, and it was the one time where the kids were all invited and they were supposed to stand up and go around and say their name when their number got called. And like Judah just owned it. He just totally stood up and said his name and was confident. I'm Judah Jones. And like you and I looked at each other like,
it was like the clearest he had ever communicated with any person ever. And it was in a crowded room with strangers.
Of people he didn't know. And it was just like pride. Yes. I mean, just that.
I remember that.
Just so proud of him and how far he's come with his own confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I remember the first time he was sarcastic. Yeah. I don't remember what he said, but I remember it was like this just kind of sarcastic little passing comment that he made. And he did it on purpose, meaning to be sarcastic, and we kind of looked at each other like, hey, because we are a very sarcastic family. So the fact that he understands sarcasm even was a big thing. That there have been a lot of highs that way. So the day that the boys came to us, I know that's also something we'll never forget. And anybody who's ever fostered or adopted, you remember that first moment that the kids came into your home. Mm-hmm. It was like 5:30 in the evening, and the car pulled up, and we were all peeking out the window, and we were all excited, and the boys were giddy. It was like Christmas, mm-hmm. And everybody was excited. And then they open the door, and in comes a caseworker holding Judah's hand and carrying Kanan, our now 5-year-old adopted mm-hmm. son.
And
Silas wasn't born yet. And they looked terrified, just absolutely terrified, confused, no idea what was going on. And all of a sudden it was like the mood just went from, you know, hey, it's Christmas and we're getting new puppies. it went from that to, oh, these are kids that are scared out of their mind right now.
Yeah.
And I remember that being also another one of those things that you just weren't really ready for. You weren't expecting, because there was just so much buildup and so much excitement about finally getting boys in your house, or finally getting kids in your house.
Finally getting the call when you'd worked so hard and done all the classes and the paperwork and talked to people, and it was like all your work was finally culminating when you got the call and you were going to get kids.
Yeah, but on the other side of the door, there are these kids that have just been through probably the worst 24 hours of their life.
Yeah.
And so if you could go back to, say, the day before they showed up at our house and tell yourself a couple things, what would you say?
I would just say that to remember what the kids are coming from and what they've been through. Mm-hmm. And then also just to be more patient with them. And I think we nailed it our first night. Once they came, it was late in the evening, and we took them to a park and we just played. And even just that first week, we went swimming a lot and we were just playful. And the boys clicked with us really fast, and I think we should have carried that playful attitude more and further mm-hmm. instead of into the, no, I can't help you put your shoes on, do it yourself. Right. I've got other kids I'm taking care of.
You're part of this family now.
It's like we went too fast from just playing to mm-hmm. we need you to fall in line because we've got this system and it has to work and you're rocking the boat and it's not working.
Yeah. And as a side note, I mean, you mentioned swimming. If if people are looking for ways to connect with their kids, swimming is a huge one, especially if you have kids who don't know how to swim, because they are forced to cling to you, physically cling to you and trust you that you're not going to let them die. So that was a huge connecting point for us.
And I've heard the opposite. Like, I've heard if kids are from orphanages and international adoption, you're supposed to cocoon and keep them in your house because they've had so many caregivers that you're trying to teach them, I'm the only one. This is me. Mm-hmm. You're with me. But we felt the opposite was best for us because they were coming from a place where they only had one caregiver. And so when we went out in public, we were still strangers, but at least we were more familiar than the rest of the strangers in the public pool. And so that kind of knitted them to us.
Yeah. And so they felt like they belonged with us more than they belonged with the other strangers. Absolutely. And I think if I could go back and say something to myself before that night, you know, if I could go back to the day before they got here, I think I would go back and say, it's not your job to fix the boys. Because that seems to be the role that I've assigned myself. My job is to correct every behavior. And it's not like a discipline thing. It's that it's more out of fear, because I fear that, oh, if they think it's okay to tell a lie, then they're going to be liars for their whole life. And so I way overcorrect and I way micromanage our adopted boys in a way that I don't do with our bio boys.
Well, yeah, because I think part of the training is you learn all the statistics. You learn how many people in prison are from foster care. You know, so you have this fear that you've got to parent this stuff out of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you parent out of fear because you don't want them to become this way. And I think we did that for a long time with Judah. We parented out of fear because he is kind of that melancholy personality. And he had a rough start to life. And so I was so afraid of him growing up and being kind of a victim personality that I was way too hard on him a lot. Cause it's like, I didn't want him to play the victim because he had that, he has that personality and I didn't want to carry that for
his whole life.
Following him for the rest of his life because I can't stand that personality in adults. So I didn't want that for him.
Yeah, but it feels like, and I know we've talked about this before, it feels like with our bio kids, we have such a broader scope for their behavior. Like, we see it in context, you know. We know, oh yeah, okay, so they lied about whether they finished dinner or not this time, you know. Tell them not to do that next time. But it seems like with our adopted boys, automatically overreact more with them because it's this fear that, oh, I've got to correct this behavior now, immediately. And I wish, if I could go back and retrain myself, I would go back and say, ease up a little bit.
Yeah.
And don't feel like it's your job to fix the kids. Because honestly, even if that is our job, it's not going to come until they feel safe with us and until they feel connected and until they feel like we are someone they want speaking into their life.
Mm-hmm.
So just telling them, hey, do it because I said so, that's not really going to get us very far.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else you wanted to add?
No, we can talk. 38 minutes.
Whew. Yeah, it's pretty good. okay. So foster.village, if there is anything you would like to contribute to this discussion, feel free to comment either on the blog or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/foster.village. And the next podcast should be coming out here in a couple of weeks, and I'll keep you updated through the Facebook page about guests that are coming on. And also, please feel free to share anybody that you think would be worth talking to on our podcast. Otherwise, you're going to get a lot more of this. We got six kids. We can spend lots of time psychoanalyzing every single one of them.
Lots of stories.
Lots and lots of stories. So, hey, I mean, if you're into that, let us know. And we got nowhere to be, I guess.
Oh, your kid won't eat this? We got three kids that won't do that. Your kid said this?
We
got four that said that.
Right.
It's kind of annoying being friends with us.
Right. And no, we don't do that, though, do we? Are we that family?
I hope not.
If we have been that family to you, we apologize.
But our kids are really cute, and they say lots of cute stuff.
And we just think we're better than everyone.
It's
No, that's not true. We don't. No, so thank you for listening. And by all means, please comment. Let us know what you think about this, especially if this is something that maybe makes you a little bit uncomfortable. If you think, you know, maybe there's something on here that you have disagreed with, feel free to throw that out there too. You're not going to offend anybody unless you're, you know, trying to offend somebody. Then maybe keep that to yourself. But get some dialogue going and see what happens, because we want this to be a place where people feel supported and loved and encouraged, and where you can talk about honest and true things about this crazy foster adopt world. So I
will add one more thing. I think there are some critics who would say I'm too open about my boys' stories and this is their stories to tell. But I feel good about, I'm at peace about the stories I share, and I feel like I don't say anything that is shaming to them or puts I'm throwing them under the bus or anything like that. And I think, too, it's easier to tell these kind of stories now because we're in a place of healing. It's not like we're speaking from our pain. We're speaking from our scars. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are in a good place. And if you saw our family, we are a close-knit family.
Yeah. And I think that is an important thing. As I'm already sort of wrapping up, I'll jump into another topic. But I do think that's an important thing when it comes to sharing about our kids. I heard a lady say one time, who's a pastor in Denver, she said, it's important to share from your scars and not from your wounds. Mm-hmm. And so if you've been through something and healing is already beginning, then I think that's a good time to start saying, yeah, we've been through this. But I think if you're needing to speak from a wound, share that only with people that you really trust, people that are really on your inner circle. And I think that there is some validity to letting some stories be the kid's story to tell. But again, going back to what we talked about earlier, sometimes we are the ones who help them tell that story because they need some language to put to it, especially language that tells their story in a redemptive way, because ultimately that's what we want for everybody.
I don't want them to be ashamed of their life and their truth. Right. And so I feel like sometimes when you don't talk about things or you're hush-hush about things, there's like a secret there because you're ashamed of it. And they have nothing to be ashamed of.
Right.
This is part of who they are.
Exactly. And you can either run from it or you can embrace it and grow stronger through it. And that's the case for all of us. We are foster and adopted families. And so we can either pretend like we're not and pretend like everything's hunky-dory, or we can embrace it and be changed and transformed by it. So we have chosen the latter. We hope that everyone else will too, because it's such a great, great experience to know that you are being transformed through this too and not just your kids. Okay, so we are now 5 minutes past the time when I started shutting this thing down. So now we are officially shutting this thing down, unless there is anything else you wanted to say.
No, that was our encore.
Okay, that was the encore. We'll pause and see if there's anything else anybody else wants to say.
Encore.
No, we're done. So again, please leave some comments and let us know perhaps what you would like to be discussed on the podcast, on future podcasts and episodes, especially if there are people you'd like for us to be or to interview. So until next time,
bye.
Keep on loving your kids and leaning on your village.